Network and Ask the Law, 800-288-9227, all across America we are. We've got our special guest, retired senior trooper Monty Dial with us to answer your questions, drivers. Again, 800-288-9227 or text us. 68683, MRN is the first word in the first line. Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
The information on this program up to date as of October 5th, 2009 can change without notice, and comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial considered to be opinions only. Drivers, you can always get your CMV questions answered at askthelaw.org. Obu USA is responsible for bringing us Trooper Dial over the years. I found some pictures of you years ago down the hall in our old studio and the whole thing, and I thought, man, have we been doing this long? One of your old sergeants that used to come in with you, it was just I just thought to myself, man, we now do it every month, but we were doing this for years, and we could not get it done without Old Blue USA. And you can go to their website, and drivers, feel free to make a monetary donation anytime you want. And they didn't ask me to say that, but it's a nonprofit organization, and donations are welcome. And I've seen R.J. Taylor work behind the scenes, and he does a lot and really cares about the information that's given to the trucking industry. This is a mission statement of his and has been for quite some time. So 800-288-9227 if you want to get on board. If you've got a question about hours of service, if you've got a question about CSA 2010, which we were talking about in hour one of Ask the Law, or a comment, we'll take that. 800-288-9227. Text us at 68683. Make MRN the first three letters. Before the break, we got a question. How will this affect foreign carriers? If you have a Canadian carrier or a Mexican carrier that's doing business in the U.S., under CSA 2010, what happens in the event that that carrier is found essentially out of compliance? We mentioned that with an American carrier from the U.S., they can essentially close their doors. But the FMCSA essentially gives these carriers operating authority in the U.S., so they could shut them down at the border.
Correct. What they have to do is any foreign-based carrier, whether it be from Canada or whether it be from Mexico, they have to apply through FMCSA for interstate operating authority to operate within the United States.
Right.
If it gets to the point that they determine that this carrier is unfit, then what they do is they basically go in and will suspend or they will revoke this carrier's operating authority, which means they have no road rights to operate their vehicles in the United States.
Okay. So for those concerned that, and I understand the concern from drivers that these foreign carriers could come in and operate and not have to abide by our laws, the fact is they do.
Yes.
They have to abide by our laws.
Yes.
Okay. 800-288-9227. If you want to get on board, let's go to the phones right now. And Chris in Texas has a comment.
Hi, Chris. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, guys.
Hey.
Okay. Well, this is multifaceted. I'll try to condense it as much as I can. But when you've got people that are going to write laws like the anti-idling laws, and actually go to enforce them, that really raises big questions for me. How a driver could be expected not to run his truck for air conditioning in Phoenix, Arizona when it's 118 in the summertime, or freezing your butt off in Minneapolis in February when it's 14 below zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that are governing all this don't follow through. I mean, they don't take it far enough. They're more interested in doing the things that they want to do. And you made a label of this earlier, heavy-handed government. The hours of service thing, they go back and forth. They can't, no two people can agree. This whole thing is way too complicated. And then my other side of the coin for this is there are certain stigmas that are never going to go away, such as, it irritates me when I'm on the interstate and I see a local cop out there running radar. Okay? Is there no crime in his city anymore? What the hell is he doing out there? But the other part of that, too, is all of us drivers out here, we are all out here interested in safety. But when you've got constables in Texas, and every person that can tote a badge wanting to be DOT nowadays. The problem with that is there is a discrimination problem with it. There's a privacy problem with it. And the whole thing is, you'll never be able to get away from the stigma that the majority of this, because they make it so technical, is not geared for revenue. Because I've had a DOT officer tell me to my face, he said, "Do you think I'm out here because I'm a good looking guy or something?" He said, "I'm out here to create revenue, and that's it." And then when you hear these guys get labeled as wide mouth wallet suckers and everything else, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on out here that are not enforced because it's not on their agenda and it's not that important. And I got stopped yesterday twice in an hour and a half in Texas, and the one thing that came out of one of the stops was I was just being nice to the DOT man, but he made it a real issue that, well, I said, I'm DOT.
We're losing you.
No, Chris, sorry, Chris. Look, and I understand your frustrations, and it sounds like your cell phone broke up on us. I understand your frustrations, and Gary and I can talk all day long about the legislation behind such movements and it geared being geared towards fundraising. We've talked about that, and we've made some points on that. The fact of the matter is that when it comes to CSA 2010 or other initiatives, there's nothing that can be done about it. This is going to be the law. This is going to be the rule. And it's our mission statement to instruct every driver that we can on all the information surrounding this rule, surrounding this law, so that you have it and you know how to protect your record. Now, when it comes to DAC, it was a matter of, and I say was, because I firmly believe that DAC will be going away. There won't be a need for DAC if every single item will be available through this and more will be available through the FMCSA 2010 initiative database. If that is the CSA 2010 database, if that's available to them, then what need is there of a DAC report? The DAC, essentially, and its members, they had all of the carriers were putting this information on there and making these reports. The carriers were putting it on there, not a federal agency, not a state agency. The carriers were. And when that comes up, that's a matter of what was reported about you. Now, it's going to be essentially everything that is being cited by that officer doing that inspection, or I'm assuming Trooper Dial at the scene of an accident. If there is a note made by that officer, this will end up in this database.
Only if it is done through the roadside inspection.
Okay. Now, Chris hit on an interesting point. That you have different agencies, you have constables, you have county enforcement, you have city enforcement, and of course state enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will this information be, if a constable is doing this, if a sheriff...
Constables cannot.
Okay. Now, they won't be participating in this.
No, constables right now are not authorized through state law to do roadside inspections, DOT inspections.
Okay.
We do have some, let's see, we have Dallas County, we have, I think, Houston,
mm-hmm.
or Harris County.
Harris County, right.
I think those are the only counties that we have, unless we have some counties down along the border.
Right.
Because the requirements, if they have an international bridge,
mm-hmm.
then I know the cities.
Now, are you talking about idling laws?
No,
okay,
I'm talking about
any
DOT inspections.
Any DOT inspections.
Right.
Okay.
Dallas County, Harris County, and maybe some of the counties along the bridge are the only counties that are authorized.
Okay.
Now, we do have a lot of cities that are involved in it. One thing that Chris might mention about the revenue, you know, first off, and I've heard this many a times when I'd get out there and stop a truck driver and do an inspection, and if I did find something that the driver needed a citation issued,
mm-hmm.
you know, the driver would always make the comment, well, I guess the state needed some more money.
Mm-hmm.
First off, any citation that a DPS trooper issues, the state does not get a dime of that money.
Interesting.
Way back when they started writing laws, back prior to 1929, when DPS was created, the legislators had enough foresight that all of the monies that is generated off of a citation issued goes to the county. The county gets that money, and it goes into the county road and bridge fund.
Okay.
So the state does not get any money.
Right.
So we could go out there and we could write, you know, all the tickets we wanted, and the state does not get a dime of that money.
That's right. Just in Texas.
Okay. That's just okay. In Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take the police departments and the sheriff's departments, the counties, yes, they get that revenue goes into those coffers that they get to use, but DPS does not get any money. As far as Chris's comments about the idling, there are only two parts of the state that no idling affects, and that's the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the Austin area. And it's only from April to October.
Right. So as of October 31st, those anti-idling laws are not into effect.
Correct.
So November 1st through up until April 1st through March 31st.
Right.
Those rules will not be in effect.
That is correct. And all the driver has to do, and we were at the truck show, a couple of months ago, and a comment came up, and a driver said, well, I'll go to Kaufman County. Well, Kaufman County's on that list,
mm-hmm.
but you can go to Rockwall County.
Right.
You can go to the truck stop there in Rockwall, and you can idle your truck in Rockwall County, and it's not on one of those lists that says you cannot idle your truck.
Okay.
So all you've got to do is make sure that you're not in one of the cities that has the no idling, but that's only in effect April to October.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other time, November the 1st to March the 31st, you can idle anywhere you want to.
If you want to get on board, 800-288-9227, send us a text, 68683, make MRN the first three letters. You got a question about any regulatory item, hours of service, or anything else, retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here, courtesy of Old Blue USA, and we're back to Ask the Law next
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara with Eric Hartley.
We're here with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. All the information is up to date as of October 5th, 2009. And Ask the Law is brought to you by Old Blue USA. All these statements or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial considered to be opinions only. Go to askthelaw.org and email your CMV questions. Just click on that big red button that says email Ask the Law. Let's get back to your questions at 800-288-9227.
Let's go to Jim in Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law.
Yes, good morning, guys. I love the show.
Had
three questions regarding CSA 2010. I'll ask them and then hang up and wait for your response on the radio.
Okay.
First one being regarding the database. Will the driver have access to the database to see, I guess, what is on the database regarding him or her? Second one was, would there be an appeals process for the database to have things removed off the database that might be on there falsely or whatever, similar to like the credit bureaus or whatever, how you can get that erased off?
Right.
And then the third part of it would be, is there going to be something on there, I guess, for how much the database on a particular driver is accessed? That's my three questions, and I appreciate it, and have a good morning.
Thank you so much. We do appreciate those questions. We'll start with the first one. That database, will drivers have access? Will they be able to see their own records?
That part I don't know. I know that there has to be a password and a login. I don't know if it's going to be limited to the motor carrier, or if the driver will have access. If the driver works for a company, obviously he can go in and get the safety director to take and download the data for him.
Right.
As far as the second part, yes, there is a current system in place now. It's called DataCube. Anytime a driver goes through a roadside inspection, if the driver and or the motor carrier feels that the information on that inspection is incorrect, the motor carrier does what we call a data cue. And most roadside inspections will give you a section number. You can go to your reg book, you can pull that section number up, and it will tell you what that violation is. So if a trooper or a DOT inspector puts something on that inspection report that is not correct, then we encourage the drivers or the motor carriers to do the data cue. You explain why you're challenging the findings of that inspection, then it goes to FMCSA, then it goes to the state, and the inspector has to respond to that.
All right, we're back in a moment with Ask the Law at 800-288-9227.
It's a Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here, courtesy of Old Blue USA. All the information that you're hearing this morning as of October 5th, 2009 is up to date and can change without notice. And all the comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial considered to be opinions only. Drivers, you can ask your CMV questions anytime at askthelaw.org. Click on that big red button that says email, Ask the Law. All right. Before the break, we had a three-part question from a driver. And the third part of that, when it comes to this CSA 2010 database, we talked about the drivers being able to access that, the appeals, and you said, yes, there is already an appeals process in place. Now, the third question was, can a driver see how often that information is being accessed and who's accessing that information?
No, and because the only way the information can be accessed is through your name, your driver's license number, and the state in which your license is. So unless somebody has that information, they cannot get into there in to access the information.
All right. So essentially, this goes back to, and this would be my advice for drivers, is that when we get into this, when CSA 2010 is active and it's this program, this initiative is implemented, you absolutely have to be diligent about the equipment. You have to make sure you're doing your pre-trip trip and your post-trip, and you have to make sure that you are in constant contact with your company, and you need to let them know that your driving record depends on them getting all of this these items taken care of. They have to address these items. Otherwise, you can't drive that truck. Just remember at the end of the day, whether no matter how you feel about it, and I think there really is no argument here. There's no discussion. The driver gets behind the wheel, and that item comes up during an inspection. That's on that driver.
Yes, it is.
And so,
I know I'm looking to the future here, but with the technology and everything, could you ever see if, because of, you know, we believe that electronic onboard recorders will be in existence soon on all trucks and probably be mandated in the next couple of years, correct?
I believe that they will be. In fact, I think in the next 3 to 5 years, you'll see EOBRs required on all commercial vehicles.
So with the technology that we have today, what do you think? You ever think that it'll be on, that they'll have a direct input or a direct line from the black boxes right to the information the DOT could have?
Well, during an inspection...
During
an inspection, those items aren't going to be put into that black box.
They're
But I mean the fact that you'd be able to look at the last week of what a driver has done.
Oh, okay. In other words,
whether the logbook would automatically be, the electronic logbook would be
on
there.
That would be the, you know, and I've heard lots of discussions about what all law enforcement will have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement is mainly interested in the number of hours the vehicle has been moving.
Okay.
That's all they're interested in. They're not interested in how fast you were running.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested in brake applications.
Right.
You know, things that, that lawyers now can go get in when they go to these trials. Mm-hmm. You know, they can download and have access to that. Law enforcement is going to mainly look at the recording of the hours that the wheels were turning on the vehicle. That's all they're interested
in. When it comes
in.
To accessing the electronic onboard
right.
recorder. Okay.
Right.
All right. 800-288-9227. Let's get back to the phones.
We go to Russ in Illinois. Russ, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Hi, Russ.
How you doing today?
Good.
A couple of questions, I guess. This DAC report, I'm understanding that that's more than just reporting whether or not you get faulty equipment citations or warnings or whatever that might be. At this time, I was understanding that the only way that you can access one's DAC report is by written permission from that particular driver.
Well, I think carriers actually have access to DAC reports and other...
Normally what happens, Russ, is motor carriers pay in to be a member of the DAC services. And
right.
One of the services that they provide is the actual report of a driver. The only people that can access that are members of the USIS. A driver is entitled to get one free report once a year. Anything else other than that, there is a fee that has to be paid.
Yeah.
But that information, USIS is merely a reporting agency. If you have Company A, who is a member of USIS, then they can report that information off of that driver to USIS. Company B, who is also a member, wants to hire this driver. FMCSA will allow the carrier to forego the background investigation if they have a copy of a DAC report in there, provided that all the companies were members of USIS that this driver worked for. If you've got Company C who is not a member and this driver lists Company C, the company now has to be contacted direct.
Yeah. So, but if you're a member of a USIS member, you don't have to contact that driver in order to access that report.
No. All you have to do is if a driver goes and puts an application in, they can take and contact, because they're a member of USIS, they can contact them and say, okay, I need a report on driver John Doe. This is his date of birth. This is the state that he has a driver's license, and this is his driver's license number. They will search the database and send the company a DAC report.
Well, my other question would be on this CSA. Now, how long do those stay on that on that report? Do they get like your driver's license after so many years?
No, what they do is they keep the most current 3-year inspections and crashes.
So it would be a rolling 3 years.
Rolling 3 years.
That was the other way. Now I've been personally dealing with DAC myself as to a person that reports to DAC through the state, and they every quarter they send them an update on what's to be changed, and they're instructed to destroy all the other reports that they presently have in their database and put the most recent report on their database. But I have learned that DAC has failed to do that. And as a matter of fact, I've got written proof that DAC, as of 2004, has information on there from 2004 that was supposed to be taken off back in 1991 and 92, and it showed back up in 2004. I then contacted DAC. It was taken off, and then supposedly it was taken off, and then just recently this year it showed back up again on that DAC report. So I know one state in particular is looking to. I think that's maybe why they're trying to eliminate the DAC.
Well, it's a deal that they're not trying to do away with DAC. What they're trying to do is they are trying to make it easier for a motor carrier to hire a driver, because there's a lot of data that is not reported to any group, and the only way that a carrier can find out about a driver's background is to take and contact the previous companies.
Right.
Because we are in such a litigious society, companies are rather apprehensive about disclosing any information about this driver to any prospective employers because they're afraid they're going to get sued. So, but under this CSA 2010, this will all be hardcore data that comes off of a roadside inspection. And it's
only roadside inspections?
Only roadside inspections.
In other words, if you're going through a scale, is that considered a roadside inspection?
Yes,
then?
Yes. Anytime you are inspected by a state police agency or a state DOT inspector, and they actually print out, give you a copy of a roadside inspection, whether it be at a scale, whether it be at the side of the road, whether it's a level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, or level 6 inspection.
If they will show you if they passed or didn't pass or whatever.
Right. They will give you a copy of that inspection, and if there are any violations listed on that inspection, those violations will go into this federal database.
What about the seventh item here under this these basics? What they call the basics,
right?
Is the crash indicator? And thank you, Russ. We do appreciate that call and those questions. Some great questions, by the way. That crash indicator, does that mean that if you're at the scene of a crash, will that information, will the crash reports be put into this database with the FMCSA?
Yes. Yeah. If you're involved in a crash. And here again, they look at DOT recordable crashes.
Okay.
So if you're at a shipper or a receiver and you back into a dock and damage your vehicle,
mm-hmm.
that's not a DOT recordable crash.
Okay. So that could keep a system like the USIS reports, the DAC reports, that could still remain in order to take care of those types of items.
Correct. But mainly what in 391 under the driver qualification files, they are mainly looking at DOT recordable crashes.
Yeah.
That's all that they're required to check on. They're not required to check to see whether or not a claim was paid because you turned a corner too sharp and took the side off of your trailer, or you backed into a dock a little bit too hard and damaged the back of the trailer. You know, that's not a DOT recordable crash.
Right.
So it's not under what is required under the current compliance review system to check and verify those types of incidents.
Okay.
So what they do is they look at the crashes. They also look at crash indicators. And Gary had asked me earlier, well, what's that? Well, that's your following too close, unsafe lane change, reckless driving.
Right.
You know, those big items that the CDL driver does not want to get.
Right.
Because, you know, it throws the red flag up.
Wow. All right. We're going to talk more, in fact, on future Ask the Laws for probably into the future, as far as you can see, about CSA 2010 every single month, the first Monday of every month. Be here for that. And we're back with our remaining moments with Senior Trooper Monty Dial on the Midnight Radio Network.
It's the Midnight Radio Network, and that's the law, Gary and Eric.
Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. Thanks, Monty, for all this great information, courtesy of Old Blue USA. AskTheLaw.org for more if you have any questions. But Trooper Dial, we'll be back here the first Monday of November, and we'll talk more about CSA 2010 and take more questions. Thank you so much.
Yes, drivers, go to the website, FMCSA's website, and read CSA 2010.
All right, thanks, Monty. It's the Midnight Radio Network.